From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, the spirit realm. Get ready for that. Here's what's happening. And what a day this has been. Wow. All right. Five soldiers have been killed, three others injured, four missing after a U.S. Army truck was swept from a low-water crossing and overturned in a swollen creek at the Fort Hood, Texas base. It's an incredible story. They have been going through horrible weather in Texas. It was the third tragic incident of the day for the U.S. military. So we had this one where the soldiers were in a truck. They were trying to go through a creek. They're there helping people. And swept away. Also, a Blue Angels fighter pilot was killed in a crash in Tennessee, and the pilot of an Air Force jet participating in a Colorado graduation ceremony flyover was slightly injured after he ejected from the craft and he crashed in a field. Jeez. Muhammad Ali, 74 years old. He's okay, but he's in a hospital. He's being treated for a respiratory issue there. A UCLA student who shot and killed a mechanical engineering professor in a campus building was heavily armed and had a kill list and was responsible for the death of a Minnesota woman. The 38-year-old shot a professor to death in his office, reportedly because he believed the professor stole a computer code from him. He later shot and killed himself. Earlier, Minnesota police said that this man also apparently killed an unnamed woman in the state. No motive or relationship between the two has been identified. And a story we have in the news at coasttocoastam.com. Take a look at this and the picture of the guy. A horned husband attacked his wife with an 8-inch knife in a jealous rage, according to police. He has implanted horns in his head, dot tattoos for eyebrows, a pink and red beard, was collared on felony aggravated assault charges with a deadly weapon after he attacked his wife with an 8-inch blade. She suffered a cut on the top of her forearm and bicep and also on the side of her body. Another sad story, this one in Phoenix, Arizona. A mother who tried to kill herself then fatally stabbed a 2-month-old, a 5-year-old, an 8-year-old of her children. What is happening to people? I thought we'd check in with Dr. Peter Bregan on this story and all these others. Peter, people are whacked out. What's going on? I mean, a mother stabbed to death her 3 kids, a guy who has implanted horns in his head attacking his wife. What's happening to people?
Well, I think there are all different kinds of things happening to people, George. This mother who just murdered her 3 children, I mean, I think if you were inside her head, she was probably in another world. I think she was very psychotic, and she went berserk. It's a very passionate, angry, hateful kind of an assault, and it may have had some religious elements in the psychosis because she was, you know, talking about to her brother that she finally knew what to do, and she had religious aspects to it. But it's very hard to just say this is this and this is that. I'm looking over tonight about 25 cases of mothers murdering their children in the last 10 or 15 years in the U.S. And they usually murder the younger kids, 8 years and younger, and the fathers usually murder the older ones, and may have something to do with responsibility that the mothers are feeling overwhelmed, but we have no evidence she's feeling overwhelmed. And it's basically people who are getting very psychotic, and that usually goes back way before the incident. That usually is something you see developing early on in childhood when somebody's that disturbed.
But can you track this? I mean, can a husband see his wife, or can the wife see the husband and notice that there's something very strange and bizarre going on here?
Oh, I would think so. But here, this woman was living with her mom,
yeah,
who says she didn't see anything strange. I mean, some people reported some strange things, like that this that the mother was neglectful, the kids were up all night. There's small signals, but nobody could look at that and say that this person was going to go berserk. I think that in common, you're going to find that these people don't have probably a relationship in which they have a security, in which they have to help them hold together. This woman, though, seems like an exception to all the rules, because, you know, she had her mother living in the house, she had her brother coming by, she had help with the kids. But, you know, George, the truth about human beings is we've been murdering children for as long as we can record history.
Yeah.
You know, even when we lived in small families, there's evidence of infanticide. We've had ritual infanticide when we've become more civilized. We are very violent creatures, and if we start losing our minds, that's one of the things that can happen, and it seems to be directed at the people nearest and dearest to us. And I'm not sure I have a quick answer for why we assault the people nearest and dearest to us, but certainly they're the ones that we have the most feelings about and often feel the most overwhelmed by.
I mean, like this guy from UCLA. I mean, he had a master's degree.
Yeah.
He drives from Minnesota to L.A., kills a professor, thinking that the professor stole a code from him, and then I guess apparently he kills a woman in Minnesota.
Yeah.
He had a kill list.
That feeling that the professor stole a code from him is probably the tip of a very psychotic mountain that he's got inside himself, about people harming him and people taking things from him. And, you know, he's probably very, very disturbed.
Indeed.
It's interesting, this whole bunch of these are so different than a lot of what we've been looking at lately, because they don't seem to have drugs involved of any kind, as far as we know, and they don't seem to be motivated by ideology. It's like people coming apart, and people have come apart and turned on the people near to them throughout our history, and it's one of the things that civilization struggles to contain.
Yeah, it just seems, Peter, that it's happening more and more. Thank you again, Dr. Peter Breggin. His website linked up on our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. Men with larger waistlines could be at higher risk of developing aggressive prostate cancer, according to a new study. Research on 140,000 men from 8 European countries found that just a 4-inch larger waist circumference would increase the chances of getting cancer by 13% there. Singer Prince, as we predicted and thought, died from an accidental overdose of a painkiller, according to medical examiners. A report from the Midwest Medical Examiner's Office in Minnesota comes more than a month after the singer was found slumped in a lift at his home in his elevator. Detectives have already questioned a doctor who saw the 57-year-old twice in the weeks before he died. Howard Bloom, of course, who comes on our program quite often, knew Prince. Sad story there, Howard. Very sad.
It's not just sad. So the big question is, what killed Prince? And the answer today was that it's an opioid that was first synthesized in the 1960s called fentanyl. And the reports say that Prince ingested it, which means he could have used a lollipop. This is a legitimate form for the administration of fentanyl, a film that you dissolve under your tongue or a pill that you lodge inside your cheek. But, George, here's the deal. The real, because if I sound emotional, it's because I worked with Prince from 1981 to 1987. He played an important role in my life, and I played an important role in his. And the real killer was not fentanyl. It's nature. The raw truth is that nature, which we are worshiping these days, has saddled us with two huge evils. One is death, and the other one is pain, and it's our job to overcome them. And look at the situation with Prince. He was only alive for 57 years, but he was in pain for 32 of those 57 years. I didn't realize it, but one of the major tours that he and I worked on together, his Purple Rain tour in 1984, when he came off that tour, he was in pain. He was having hip pain. And the pain became so bad that Prince was forced to have hip replacement surgery in 2010. Now, hip replacement surgery is normally restricted to people over the age of 60, and Prince was only 51 years old, and we forget something. When we're healthy, you and I are both healthy now, you forget what severe pain is really like. It takes all of your attention, it takes all of your energy away from everything else, it makes it impossible to work, and I mean really severe pain, and impossible to create. But pain management is still in its infancy. Yes, we synthesized opioids, which means opium and morphine-like drugs, in the late 1960s, and fentanyl is one of those opioids. But opioids are addictive, and your pain starts to overcome the effects of the opioids very fast. Now look, Prince was self-disciplined. He was in extremely good shape, and he was, like me, a bloody workaholic. He sometimes made his music 24 hours a day. He needed something that would wall his pain off so he could give you and me the vault full of music that he's left to us as a legacy. And when he was found in his lift, as you put it, in the elevator at Paisley Park, you got to realize what Paisley Park was. It's a complex that had a huge living space and a huge studio. It was built for a guy who likes to work 24 hours a day. He was found at 9:43 in the morning. He was slumped in the elevator. He was almost certainly either on his way to make music or trying to come back to his bedroom from an all-nighter in the studio. Now, the question is there a solution for this problem of opioid addiction? Because it's killing a lot of people, especially veterans. And now, the Drug Policy Alliance says we should give chronic pain sufferers who are forced to use opioids a take-home supply of naloxone. Naloxone is the drug that blocks opioid receptors and saves you from an overdose.
Gosh, but you got to take a drug for a drug, Howard. It's a mess.
Yes. Yeah, well, George, our job is to overcome pain and death. And we are doing it inch by inch, and we're still in a primitive phase. This stuff, naloxone, is available this year in 40 states from Walgreens. And I seriously believe that if Prince had had naloxone at Paisley Park, he would still be alive today.
And
I would be much happier for it.
Thanks, Howard. And like we're saying, the medical examiner out there in Minnesota said that Prince died from an accidental overdose of painkillers. The Cincinnati Zoo will reopen its gorilla exhibit next week with a higher reinforced barrier after that little boy got into the enclosure, leading to the primate's fatal shooting. A zoo spokesperson said that the outer barrier will now be 42 inches high, a half a foot taller than before, with solid wood beams on top and at the bottom, plus a knotted rope netting at the bottom. They should have done that a long time ago. We have a story, a highlight story at coasttocoastam.com. A man thinks in Utah that he might have found a Bigfoot skull. You just have to go look at the story. He's holding something. I don't know what it is. There are 8 planets in our solar system now that they booted Pluto out of the planet world. But they're thinking now that this Planet 9, it's called, which may be another one in our solar system, way, way out there. As a matter of fact, it orbits the sun every 10 to 20,000 years, might have been captured by our own sun from another star system about 4.5 billion years ago. It's an amazing story, but is that Planet X? And those of you in Phoenix, if you were awake, you heard and maybe saw a huge streak of light that brightened the sky, prompting worry and curiosity. First reports came in about 4 o'clock in the morning from that Phoenix area. NASA estimating a small asteroid, approximately 10 feet in diameter, with a mass in the tens of millions, entered the atmosphere. Dr. Sky Stephen Cates is being questioned about this all day. Stephen, you're busy.
Oh, yeah, George. This is amazing. As you said before, Phoenix and Arizona is now in the forefront of all these stories around the world about the sky. But precisely, George, this is interesting. At 3:56 a.m. and 30 seconds Mountain Standard Time, viewers here in Arizona, all parts of the West, actually, were seeing a huge flaming object coming out of the sky. Now, I did not see that, but my phone's been ringing all day, of course, to try to answer what it is. But folks that were driving just before sunrise, George, got to see this most incredible luminescence of light in the sky, thinking we had a missile launch from over in White Sands. No. Here's the details as we now know them. Approximately 3 meters in diameter, the object traveling 40,000 miles an hour, first detected, or at least the astronomers believe, some 50 miles above the Earth's surface near Payson, Arizona, heading in a southeasterly course, passing over Lake Roosevelt, for all of us who know that great lake in Arizona. But the important part, George, is sonic booms were actually heard. Friends of mine were thinking there was an earthquake. I didn't hear anything. I'm a good sleeper. But the point of the matter is, there probably is a serious strewn field. What is that? That's a debris field from this particular object. George, 10 kilotons of kinetic energy in the sky. Remember, Hiroshima was atomic bomb, some 18 kilotons. And what we're going to be doing here, we'll be updating you, of course, as we go on in time. Fascinating event. You can learn so much about it. But send your reports to the American Meteor Society. They need those and your videos. George, we'll be telling you more about this and maybe finding some rocks ourselves.
Stephen, it's not if, but when we're going to get hit by one of these, really hit. My prediction. An Egyptian dagger found in King Tut's tomb was made with iron from a meteorite, according to a new study. How about that story? Elon Musk is saying that there is a 1 in billions chance that we're not living in a computer simulation. He thinks we're all being created by artificial intelligence. Apple, by the way, if you have an Apple phone, you might have had some problems today. They said a number of their services, including its App Store, was experiencing some issues today. And in a moment, Lauren Weinstein joins us. We're going to be talking about all kinds of technology issues next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, Lauren Weinstein with us. Lauren, of course, has been involved in the development of the Internet for decades, and we turn to him for all kinds of issues of technology. Lauren, welcome back.
Greetings, George. How are you this evening?
Good. I do want to get your reaction to Elon Musk saying that we are all living in a computerized simulation.
Yeah,
My gosh.
Yeah, he's a very, very smart guy, and he also is a little bit strange.
So we're real, right? We're real. We're not some artificial intelligence creation.
I'm not saying that we're, 100% not living in a simulation, and some very intelligent people have said that there's a certain chance of that. I think Elon's statistic, though, his number there is kind of giving it a bit more credence than most people would. I'm not sure what he bases that on. It'd be very interesting to know where he got that number, but I don't know, maybe he should, stick to autonomous cars and things like that. But we'll see. I could be wrong. We could all be, running in an old Amiga or something. It was, some of the people you meet, you think came out of an old video game.
So. We get just deleted and we're gone, poof, just like that.
We might be able to approve some things with a delete key. You never know.
Well, I'm glad you're with us for a couple hours. Most of the time you're with us just reacting to some news event of the day, and there are, of course, many of those I want to talk with you about. But I've got to ask you this.
Yeah.
And our IT people are saying, don't take it, don't download it. But all my computers
Windows 10.
Get Windows 10 popping up, says, come on, upgrade, take it. What the heck's going on here?
Yeah, this has been getting just worse and worse. And personally, and this sounds a little bit strong, but I really feel this way. I personally believe that the way Microsoft has handled this what I call a forced upgrade, has been borderline criminal because I'm serious, because what they have done has caused so much disruption for so many people who were had computers that were running important applications and then got really seriously screwed up. Whether or not they could back out is sort of a different issue, because Microsoft has been so incredibly aggressive pushing out Windows 10, often to computers that could only really marginally run it. Sometimes the computers that couldn't run it at all, and those were really in trouble. Other times the computers that could run it but had really poor performance compared to what they were running before, whether it was, and that would be like Windows 7 or Windows 8 or 8.1 or something like that. And so there's been a sort of a continuum of abuse by Microsoft in this. Originally they were kind of asking, gee, do you want to upgrade? And then they started slipping the upgrade notices in, just the upgrade to Windows 10, they started slipping it in with the regular system updates, the optional updates, and then they slipped it into the recommended updates. In other words, they made it harder and harder
to reject it.
To reject it, because it became more and more of a default condition. And then finally, a week ago, 10 days ago, something like that, or even maybe it was less, people started noticing they were getting pop-ups that said you want to proceed with doing an upgrade.
And in my case, Lauren, it was already starting to download.
Yeah,
I had to get rid of it.
That's what they did. They started downloading it even if you weren't going to use it. And it's a not insignificant chunk of code, too. But here's the really funny part.
Well, hold on right there. We're already at the break. I went a little long with our news, but we're going to come right back with you in a moment here on Coast to Coast AM to get into this. And I'm sure, folks, if you have a computer at home, laptop, desktop, you're seeing this too, Windows 10 popping up all over the place. Oh, what a week coming up, and then, what a couple months. Contact in the desert, it's going to be 115 degrees, but we're going to be out there having a great time. Panel, we're going to celebrate my birthday. Full information at coasttocoastam.com under the highlight reel. You'll see that. And then in St. Louis, June 18th, there's a section there I want to sell out. There's about 10 tickets left, and then that entire section is full. I want you to come and see us. Simply go to our website again. You'll find the information on the St. Louis live event, which is June 18th. And then those of you down south, Asheville, North Carolina, August 27th, an amazing show at the Diana Wortham Theater. It's a small theater, but we've got paranormal investigator Joshua P. Warren. He's going to be one of our guests. As a matter of fact, he's there right now checking out the theater to make sure that it's okay. And he's got some surprises for us. He claims he's got a piece of the Roswell UFO wreckage, and he's bringing that with some security guards. So you can take a look at that, and we'll post for pictures and things. So all that information at coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Lorne Weinstein with us. Next hour, we're going to take phone calls with him about incredible technology. There's a story on facial recognition. We want to talk with them about Apple had some issues today. But, Lorne, back to Windows 10, and you were talking about it. Go ahead.
Well, I was saying that Microsoft has sort of been escalating their abuses when it comes to Windows 10, pushing that out. So very recently, they started popping up a box that people were very concerned about because it said, you know, do you want to proceed, you know, with the upgrade? But all the choices were basically yes. I mean, there was no obvious way to say no. But there was the typical little X in the upper right-hand corner, right? You get a user interface box, and you often, if you don't want to make a choice, you usually just close the box, right?
Yeah.
You click on the little X. Except in this case, clicking on the little X meant yes. So people, you know, they click it. Well, I'm done with that. But then it just went ahead and did the upgrade anyway. But Microsoft heard the complaints about this, and apparently within the last couple of days, they made another change. They removed the X.
They're being a little ethical there, right?
Well, it's you know, no should mean no, right? In all kinds of aspects of life.
What is so important about pushing Windows 10?
It is absolutely critical to Microsoft because they see the writing on the wall that their model of selling the operating system and getting people to upgrade it every few years is collapsing because of the move to cloud services, to you know, services that you pay for on a regular basis, or at least that are paid for through information that they gather from you. Excuse me. And as we know, Windows 10, out of the box, so to speak, the way it arrives on your computer for free, absorbs a tremendous amount of information. It has all kinds of telemetry that's very privacy abusive, and there have been lots of articles written on how to turn off all the different things that Windows 10 starts to take from you in terms of information that earlier versions of Windows didn't. Now, there's three important points here I want to make about where we're going with Windows 10
right now.
One of them is that supposedly this whole free upgrade push ends on July 31st. That's what Microsoft has said. That's like a year from when it started. And they're saying, so after that, you won't get free upgrades. You'd have to pay for an upgrade, and supposedly all this interference will cease. A lot of people don't really believe that's going to happen. They think that Microsoft will either extend it or do something to keep pushing things through. We shall see.
Mm-hmm.
Another point of this is that if you have been pushed into Windows 10 when you didn't want to be, there is a way to back out. It doesn't always work, but it usually does. There is a link you can choose. It's fairly obvious the way it's set up if you go looking for it, where it will restore your system back to the previous system with all your data. But you have to do that, unless you go through some special changes that most people wouldn't know how to do, you have to do that within 30 days. After 30 days, that option is gone, and you are permanently in Windows 10. The final thing is that if you want to block Windows 10 from being pushed into your computer now, there are complicated ways to do it. There's a bunch of programs to do it. The one I recommend, because I've been putting this on people's computers and it's been working real well to shut Windows 10 out, is something called GWX Control Panel. That's it, as in the good winter xylophone, GWX. And if you Google that and find that, you install it, you click a couple of options, it's free, of course, and then it basically takes away the Windows 10 icon. It stops the Windows 10 nagging, and I've had nothing but good reports about it. I use it on a couple of my systems, and that's a good choice if you want to just shut down the whole Windows 10 experience right now.
Now, if we're not using Windows 10, what are we using now?
You could be using something as old as XP. You know, which isn't.
I think I am Windows 7. Would that make sense?
Yes, Windows 7 would be very likely. A lot of people are running various versions of Windows 8.
All right. Now, how long can we run 7 or 8 before we're outmoded or whatever?
I know the numbers for 7 off the top of my head, and 8 is going to be a little bit later. 7 has already passed the first milestone for Microsoft support in terms of they're not doing more feature updates for it, but there will be security updates through, I believe, sometime in 2019. So by the time you get to 2020, they'll be stopping the security updates.
That's what they did on previous things.
Right. Right. They have a timeline, a product support timeline. First they stop the features, and then they stop the security updates. In some cases, with XP, there was such an outcry that they actually extended it out a little bit. There's no telling if they will this time. Now, that doesn't mean you have to stop using Windows 7 on that date. It just means that you won't be getting more security updates from Microsoft. A lot of people are still running Windows 7 and intend to keep doing it as long as possible.
Lauren, in terms of technological use, is Windows 10 good?
It depends. If you have a powerful enough computer, and if you're comfortable with Microsoft being much more deeply intertwined with your operations in terms of the information that you're sharing with Microsoft, it's a useful operating system. It has certain features that are advanced over Windows 7. I think what is has the two things that have bothered people the most about Windows 10 has been the privacy issues with such a massive change in their paradigm from Windows 7 or 8, which really didn't take very much information at all from your systems by default, to Windows 10, which took all kinds of information from you by default and didn't make it all that easy to turn it off. And then the other thing about Windows 10 that rubbed so many people the wrong way is this whole, quote, forced, quote, upgrade. You know, a very, you know, it's kind of like an upgrade you can't refuse, right? Kind of thing. At least making it as difficult to refuse as possible, and that just seems sleazy. You know, I think it goes beyond sleazy. But Microsoft sees this as their future, and they're the only way to stay competitive now. They may be right. That may be the only way they can stay competitive, but that doesn't necessarily make it right.
Now, by giving it away right now for free, where do they eventually make money?
On the service model, the idea is that they want to sell you services in the cloud that you will use that are related to Microsoft in one way or another. Also, of course, this model makes it easier for them to push advertising and such through. If you've looked at Windows 10, it's very heavy on screen advertising and various kinds of promotional packages that are potentially pay things you would pay for that didn't exist that way in earlier versions of Windows. And this is logical for them because Windows 10 is much less of a standalone operating system and much more of a kind of extension of the cloud as far as they're concerned.
So Mark Zuckerberg from Facebook was talking live with astronauts on the International Space Station with something called Facebook Live. What's that?
Well, there's all kinds of things going on now with all kinds of
stream video. It's everywhere.
Streaming video and video conference sharing and video calling and all kinds of different versions of this now. The big push now for Microsoft and for others is live streaming. You know, there's applications like Periscope and all kinds of things. You know, ways to stream directly from your friendly neighborhood drone, all kinds of different applications, with live being the key word. Instead of just taking a video and then uploading it and you know, like you would upload it to YouTube or somewhere, and then people would view it that way, you would look at it in real time. And YouTube has the same, has had live streaming features for a long time. So in a lot of ways, Facebook and the others are actually catching up with YouTube on that. There is a dark side of this that is starting to emerge in terms of live streaming in general. And I've had people asking me about this, and for the life of me, I don't have a great solution to it right now.
What is it?
And what it is you're finding people streaming very, very bad things. People streaming domestic abuse, actually streaming live murders.
There was a movie on that.
Yeah, well, this is reality now. This is, you know, in a way, it's almost, it sounds like something from the Saw films, right?
That's right, and they're getting people to watch this, aren't they?
Yeah, well, now the technology is there, and there are very, very sick people out there who apparently decide that if they're going to, you know, kill a person or harm someone or harm an animal or destroy something,
they want to do it live on video.
They want to do it live in front of the biggest audience they can get. And I think sometimes they don't care if they're going to get caught or not. They just want to do it that way. And there's an audience for it. And the only solution I can see to that is sort of crowdsourced abuse reporting. I mean, if there's enough people watching who will report it, it can be dealt with relatively quickly because these large companies do have teams that can react to these things. But people have to report it in sufficient numbers that it's going to rise above the noise. But I find it very distressing. You know, I've worked with the Internet for a very, very long time. And to see it abused in this way, it's not something that you know, I really hoped for the Internet. So now the key is to find a way to fix things like this and make them better.
Jeez, it's truly remarkable what's going on. And can you find someone who's doing that? Can they find this IP address and get to them?
Yeah, a lot of times they can. Often the people who do this are not, you know, terribly sophisticated in how they've set things up. You know, they're not using complicated proxies and multiple hops and things. Sometimes they are. But a lot of times, you know, when people do this, they don't even really understand the technology at all. Yeah, and if they're doing it for long enough, and if the IP address can be traced back, often they can be found. Of course, the damage is usually done by that time. You know, when you think about it, a lot of the ways that technology is used to fight crime doesn't involve really sophisticated things. I mean, think about all the criminals who are caught by cell phone location now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now there's a controversy about this now because the court just ruled that that law enforcement can get hold of cell phone location records without a warrant in a lot of cases, which does bring up some serious privacy issues also. But it just seems like a lot of criminals, it doesn't occur to them that they don't necessarily have to keep their phone turned on all the time, right? So if they turned off their phone or didn't take their phone with them, the phone couldn't be used to locate.
And you can't take batteries out like you used to. They're in the phone.
Yeah, it's in the old days when people said, how can I be sure that my phone is really off? I'd say, oh, that's easy. Just pull out the battery.
That's right.
And any other batteries in there wouldn't be powerful enough to run the transmitter. They would just be for the real-time clock and such. Now you can't get them open without a hammer or other sharp instrument, and then you've destroyed the phone. And it isn't necessarily easy to know what the phones are doing. Years ago, I did a YouTube video called, you know, was how to tell if your phone is bugged. And one of the three steps I had in that was, you know, take out the battery, you know, check the battery. And now that's
you can't do that.
You can't, that's gone. That option has.
And when the battery gets weak, generally it's close to your upgrade time. You just get a new phone.
Yeah, and that's part of the business model that we have now, of course, which is you're supposed to upgrade the phone every couple of years.
That's right.
And if you don't, you're not a good consumer.
You know, it's like the old appliance business. In the old days, we had appliances, Lauren, my folks did, that lasted forever.
Hey, I have a Maytag washer here.
Yeah.
That's been running for at least 300 years.
They go forever, or the old refrigerator motors would last forever. Now, you get 3 or 4 years out of it, you're lucky.
Plastic and coat hanger wire.
Yep, absolutely. What is going on with internet censorship worldwide?
Well, yeah, we're going from one depressing topic to another.
Right. You have just a litany of fun stuff for us tonight.
Yeah. It's bad. It's bad, and it's getting worse. And it's really unfortunate that I can't say it's just Russia, it's just China, because it's also Europe. It's increasingly people talking about it here in the U.S. Luckily, we have a constitution and Bill of Rights that makes that a little bit tougher to do here. But man, over in the EU, they are pushing that right to be forgotten. We've talked about the right to be forgotten laws before. That's turning into a nightmare on top of nightmares. And this was predicted. A lot of us were predicting where this was going to end up. So now France, for example, doesn't just want to censor. Most of this is being aimed at Google right now, Google search results, but it's broadening out fairly rapidly to other things too. France doesn't only want to be able to control the search results that Google shows in France. France wants to be able to control the search results that Google shows everywhere in the world. France wants to say, if this is something, a search result we don't want you to show, you can't show it to anybody on the planet.
Hmm.
And this presents a real problem because, of course, lots of other countries want to do this too. And you can just imagine
what a mess.
What kinds of things, you know, Putin wouldn't want you to see, or Chinese leaders wouldn't want you to see.
Or Kim Jong-un from North Korea, right?
Exactly. So pretty soon you would end up in this lowest, you know, it's a race to the bottom, right? Lowest common denominator. What is there that no leader and no government on the planet doesn't want you to see? You know, it's a disaster if individual countries have censorship powers that are global in reach. I mean, if they really want to censor within their own countries, I think it's counterproductive. I think they're just pushing things underground and not fixing the problems. But if they're going to do that, at least they should just be doing it in their own countries, not trying to do it globally. But now it's gotten even worse. In another country in Europe now, there has been a court ruling that says that you also have to censor newspaper archives the same way as you would search results. You actually have to go to the newspapers and remove the archive materials. Now, if this doesn't sound like something out of 1984, you remember Smith there taking the articles and then and then dropping the articles into the burner next to him, and it's like the history was never there. The history
was gone.
Yeah, that's exactly what they're pushing now. And unfortunately, in our current political climate, not just in Europe, but you can find politicians here in the U.S. who are pushing the same thing. Now they will say this in ways that, you know, when you first hear about it, say, well, that makes sense. You know, like they want to stop terrorist propaganda and they want to, you know, catch criminals and all that. We can all say, yeah, we don't want terrorism, we don't want criminals. But inevitably, when you try to do censorship in any way related to these kinds of systems, and especially if you start going back to newspapers and things, for God's sake, it never ends. I mean, the history of civilization, censorship probably goes back to the caves when people were trying to wipe out, you know, the other person's paintings and things. It always expands because it's such a powerful tool, censorship. If it gets its claws into a society, it never lets go. So it's a terrible problem, and unfortunately the internet has made censorship in some ways harder because information can be duplicated in different places around the world very easily in a lot of cases. But in some ways it's made it easier to censor because if governments can get a stranglehold on their central internet connections, like China has done, for example, where they have a very elaborate great firewall system to control what information from outside China can get in and even what information flows within China, if you can control those choke points, you can do, you know, fairly effective censorship within those realms. And even if there are ways around it, even if there are tricky ways around it, using proxies, using VPNs, virtual private networks, things like that, which exist, they can make it difficult enough so that if you get caught using it, you end up shackled in a cell somewhere. So in a way, the internet has, it's a tool, right? The internet is a tool like a hammer. It can be used for wondrous things, and it can be used for horrible things. And in the same way, in some ways, it's made censorship less practical, and in some ways, it's made censorship easier than ever. So there we are.
Lauren, when we come back, we're going to take phone calls with you, but I also want to get your feelings on the internet and how it might have destroyed businesses, retail establishments, newspapers, and so much more.